Oh boy, Joshi 2010s, and we got a good one today. Good quick turnaround here from the last one. I'm feeling much better these days. It is JWP 20th anniversary Mania X from 2012. Corken Hall. And very, I don't want to say star-studded show, but a very interesting show from a number of aspects I can't wait to talk about here. Namely, the Arisa Nakajima return to pro wrestling. This is the most interesting part I want to talk about of the show, and then the main event involves some critical thought over just who we think should be in the main event. Is it the right decision? Those kinds of things that I really enjoy talking about when it comes to pro wrestling, and then the match itself, really good. And I'm at a 50-50 on this show if it was an upper-level show, or am I kind of overthinking it in a few senses? But other than that, we last left off with a Wave quarterly coverage and the retirement of Toshi Amatsu, and we're kind of filling in some gaps here as that was a compilation DVD set. And good news, which I'm very happy to announce, is I, out of nowhere, have acquired the Catch the Wave 2012 DVD. Very exciting. It was something I absolutely, desperately wanted to cover in the year of 2012 on this Joshi 2010's journey. And we do have it, so I'm going to place that when we get through July. And because that's when Catch the Wave ends, and we will just do a big Catch the Wave episode, which I'm very much looking forward to. In the meantime, we still got JWP here. Let me pull up the whole Joshi 2010s archive, in which, by the way, members of the Patreon, I have uploaded a bunch of shows up into the drive, along with the Excel sheet that has all of the shows and matches that we'll be covering and have covered on the show. So if something isn't in the drive yet, just shoot me a message on Patreon or DM me on Twitter at BowlingJD, and then I can upload that first and foremost since you asked for it. But again, if you are subscribed to the Patreon and helping out fund this podcast essentially and the coverage of the history of Joshi Pro Wrestling, then hit me up and I can add you into it. We have Stardom Golden Stars 2012, which is coming up after this, and then Ice Ribbon, Golden Ribbon. So lots of Corken Halls coming up in Joshi Wrestling, but this is the JWP cast. Last we left off for JWP in particular, we basically covered their entire tag league, and we got the winners of the tag league, Toshi Amatsu and Ran Yuyu, along with the Contenders, which is going to be a match on this show, which is the Lucha Joshi team of Leon and Rey. So that was a match I was immensely excited for, because I do like that tag team, and I've really grown fond of the Yamatsu Ran Yuyu tandem, and especially on their retirement road. I think it's gone pretty well for the most part. I did in the last cast for the retirement show kind of question why at this point in their career they still have all these tag titles in their possession when we know one of them's retiring at the end of April. So that's kind of where I stood there. And then in the meantime, the main event is the returning challenger for Tsubasa Kurigaki in a run is Kayoko Hariyama. And as we know, we finished 2011 with Tsubasa Kurigaki being built up and defeated the Big Gaijin of Haley Hatred, and a match that like vastly exceeded my expectations. And Tsubasa Kurigaki has not defended the title since she won it, so this is her first defense on this show at this Corken Hall, the 20th anniversary show, which is a curious decision that They didn't want to throw in a title defense kind of in like end of January, February-ish to at least get something under her belt heading into a match with her tag team partner. And I did question heading into the show, is this enough? Is this a match that the fans want to see? Is Kyoko Hariyama and Tsubasa Kurigaki the main eventers, the attractions to get people into these buildings? Or is there something more that they could be doing? I did question the aspect to how much that they are still main eventers in the year of 2012. Because in my personal opinion, I kind of don't see them quite that way. But we're going to do a little comparison to kind of the rest of the roster and what's going on here. And maybe we'll get into the mindset of why these two are main eventing the 20th anniversary show as opposed to anyone else. But regardless, we got a pretty, I guess, stacked card for all intents and purposes of what they're going for here. As we know, JWP is at Corican Hall here, an attendance of 1,056 for the 20th anniversary show. As we know, back in the early 90s, JWP had a closure / split in which half the roster left to start LLPW, and then JWP essentially had to restart the promotion on April 22nd, 2012, and then the rest is history from there. Let's do a little comparison here. 1,056. Do we think this is a good number? It is a 20th anniversary show, so you would expect a 1,000 minimum, because anniversary shows and retirement shows always seem to draw numbers. But if we go back to the Yonayama retirement show at the year end, that got 1,170. And we know the controversy that came out of that one with the not retirement of Yonayama, the whole mind changing. And then if we just go back year over year to the other Mania X's from 2011, 852, 2010, 839, 2009, 810. So very consistent across the board year over year over year. And I'm just kind of stopping at 2009 as that's in the recent history of JWP at this point. So 1,056 is indeed larger than those numbers, but I would expect it to be larger. In fact, I expect it to be much larger. I expect it to be at least in line with the Yonayama retirement. I would expect it to maybe perhaps even eclipse 1,200. It is a 20th anniversary show, and you gotta make this big. You gotta make it feel big. So that kind of goes more into what I've been questioning is Tsubasa Kurigaki and Kyoko Hariyama the main eventers you need at this point in time, regardless of my opinion over them. I'm kind of looking at the stat lines here, and I think a good indication will be the next time that they run Corican. And that's going to be in a few months' time at the Pure Slam show, I believe. And we'll do some year-over-year comparisons there. And if they just go straight back to the 800 numbers, then I think we have our answer, that they were able to get 200 people in only for the anniversary show, because it's a special occasion. It's not every day you get to your 20th anniversary. And then they just went back right to what they've been doing every year over the last, 3 to 5 years. So not a little momentum up or down. It's, I guess, quote unquote, fine that you're consistent, but this is a business and you want to grow. And as we know, when it came to 2017, JWP's contract went up with the sponsor, and they just kind of shut down house and kept the name. And now we have Pure J today, and they can, I hate to say it, but they can barely get 100 people in a building. them's the breaks. So how often do I talk about business on this podcast? I talk it a lot. And whether you really care about the business side or not, if these people don't get paid and they can't rent these places out, then we don't get to watch our favorite wrestlers continue doing what we love watching them do. That's kind of the point of why I bring up a lot of these business sides to the Joshi part of wrestling when, you know, no one else covers this like I do. No one pays attention to these kinds of aspects. And it's really a representation of where the scene truly is when you get to Cork and Hall and you're throwing flowers at, you know, breaking 900. To an extent, maybe, depending on the promotion. Like, if Pure J walks into Cork and Hall tomorrow and they get 800 now, yeah, we'll be like, oh, fuck yeah. You know, they've almost doubled their attendance on that time. That is indeed, you know, throwing flowers. But I'm also not going to come on here and say, oh man, they're the next coming of stardom. That's not happening. There was a line that we can't cross. So 1,056, I think it's a little low, even though it is up year over year. It is a 20th anniversary. I would expect more. And I think my theory of Kurigaki and Hariyama might have some merit, but we'll have to see what happens in the later parts of the year at Korakuen's going forward, and possibly run out some theories of what they could do and should do. And let's get into this card. We begin with a tag match of youngsters. Aoi Yagami, not one of my favorites, Nana Kawasawa defeating the Dorami Nagano team, and Sari, whom we remember debuted at the Diana show for their first show in 2011. We have not heard from Diana since, and that's for good reason, if you can imagine. Much like in the same realm of Sendai, but not as bad as Diana. Went 8.5 minutes. It's a lot of, it's three out of shape people plus Sari, the teenager. So very much a botch fest. Lots of missed into repeat spots. So there was multiple occasions with different people, even Sari included, where they are supposed to run up the turnbuckle to the second rope and turn around, and they all slipped until they had to try again. Lots of stuff like that going on. Sari here at least looked competent and in shape compared to the others. Another bummer is still the gear throughout the scene right now for many of them. It's just in general, it's just what they can afford and what they do, but no one seems to have an identity with any sort of gear, and your presentation of you as a wrestler is much part of the marketing for the promotion as much as yourself. Nana Kawasawa with her awful haircut and green hair, looking like an out-of-shape Saeeda here. She gives a Northern Light suplex to Sari and pins her. This was not good, guys. As you can imagine, big goose egg out of three. But it was good seeing the beginning stages of Sari here, because we don't get to talk about her very much and her journey on the come up. Perhaps in the next year or so, we get to see more. And if I was a betting man, this Princess of Pro Wrestling title, the Pop, might just be in her future in particular. Okay. So, speaking of the Pop title, it is Sawako Shimono defending against Rabbit Miyu. And boy, does Rabbit Miyu become a thing on this show, and it sure seems like she's going to be a thing going forward. Rabbit Miyu, how tall is this childlike figure of a wrestler? I must confirm, because she has to be maybe 4'9". She's called Rabbit for a reason. She is 4'7", 139 centimeters, even smaller than I imagine. Yeah, she is a tiny thing. She is technically a little person. Look, the match went 3 minutes. It's a sprint of near falls and roll-ups. Crowd really popped for, yes, Rabbit Miyu winning the match and the title. Yoniyama hits the ring, embraces the Rabbit in post. Undercard title, hey, it gets a pop for the underdog winner. You know what? I'm in a good mood. Why not? And it was short. This was fine. Do I think she should hold this title for months on end? I do not. Because, look, she's freaking 4'7". She is smaller than children. There are limits to these things. It's like, look, she's an enduring little character. It's very nice. She's adorable, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's not get carried away is kind of what I'm going at. Like, she absolutely has a role that she could fill, and something around the pop title here, the little junior title, that's a nice placement. But let's not, we'll keep an eye on Rabbit Miu because there's more of her to come. Okay. Tag team match action. I'm going to call this the All-Star Tag because it's Hanako Nakamori teaming with Masaki Iwata. Love this team already. And they're taking on the returning Hysteric Babe. I'm thinking that's they missed it, like historic. But it is Sacha Abe teaming with Arisa Nakajima. So Arisa Nakajima started in, 2005, I want to say, with the remnants of Arsian back to A to Z. And then that she was out in, 9 months? And she was, she kind of hit up the freelance scene a little bit with Arisa, or not Arisa, with Sacha Abe. They made a little short stint as a tag team as Hysteric Babe. And it was in, 2006 or 2007. I think it was 2006 that both Abe and Nakajima signed with JWP. So they became, they got out of the freelance scene, signed with a promotion. And since, Arisa Nakajima was absolutely a rookie at the time, she was doing rookie things, and Abe went on, the path that she went on. Now, cut to 2009, and it is cited, and I saw a couple interviews, it is cited that due to poor health, whether it's leg issues or back issues in particular was a big common one. And Nakajima, the point is Nakajima got injured, and that part is definitely real. And what happens, and we've talked about this a number of times, is when people get hurt pretty bad and they're sidelined for a good chunk of time. Yonayama is probably the best example. She broke her jaw or whichever it was, and you sit out for a while and you just think about retirement. And it takes some close people to kind of help change your mind or get you back in the spirits. And I certainly couldn't find anything in which someone got to Arisa Nakajima to even attempt to talk her out of it. I couldn't confirm any of that. A very similar kind of happening story, at least in the sense later on in the 2010s, where Nanai Takahashi was involved, and when JWP closed, or when Sakushi got hit with the stabbing incident, Nanai Takahashi was there to kind of convince them to stick where they were. But in Arisa Nakajima's case, it sure reads and sounded like she was going to try to make it in the United States, and she was talked into staying in Japan. But in this case, in 2009, she thought about retirement, and she went through with it. And there was a nice little interview she did over on the Joshi Pod a couple of years ago, where she claims she desired to live a normal adult life, is kind of the translated quote there. And she was only 20 at the time, so this kind of makes sense. You're a young person, you think that maybe wrestling isn't what it's chalked up to be, especially at this period in time when it clearly doesn't pay well at all. Attendance is freaking low. There's not a lot going for it. So you're out injured, you're 20. You're like, man, I need to do something with my life. And she was out for, almost 3 years. Here we are in April 2012. She left in 2009, so that's what happened. She left the door open to come back, and she did, and that's led to this match. She announced her comeback at the Yonayama retirement show. And my own theory is that was also around the time where Azumi Hyuga in JWP retired. And I don't know if she had anything to do with that, but whenever you have a big figure, at least in the sense of someone in the scene retiring, that also contributes to some motivation there. I mean, hell, look at Toshi Amatsu. She announced her retirement for essentially familial reasons, and Ran Yuyu, her longtime tag team partner, is like, all right, I guess it's time I hang it up too. Even though she didn't really have the same motivation, but, you know, her friend of many, many, many years is going away, and that's what happened. But here we are. The match went 11 and a half minutes, and it's the re-debut of Arisa Nakajima. Let's get it on, guys. And boy, this was high effort and high energy type tag. Nakajima, still young, mind you. Both Ohada and Nakamori at the beginning stages of their careers, more or less. You know, it's not like they're 10-year veterans sprucing it up here, but they're kind of in that same realm as Nakajima. The point is, when you watch this match, you're like, these are the people. These are the dudes, you know? They all looked great with room to grow, and that's my most important takeaway. They all still have so much potential. And then Sacha Abe was in here doing what I've wanted to see her do out here much more often. It's too often she's in these kind of meaningless trios matches that don't really have the high energy, high effort, and she's never pushed in any capacity. But at least in here, it seemed like she had a purpose. And she came to play and really hype up Arisa Nakajima in her comeback match and do it right. So this was an awesome match and exactly what I wanted. Hanako Nakamori is the one that ends up getting the pin on Arisa Nakajima. She hits a jumping knee strike from the top, so not the best finisher, to be honest. She does it a little bit better today. It's very Norio Tateno-esque with the top rope knee strike and knee drop. Regardless, definitely something else she could work on, please. But yeah, I mean, this is your future. This is your future in JWP. These are your three people with still a fourth that you can do something with in the case of Sacha Abe. So I went 2 out of 3 recommendation on this match. It's I'm not going like 4 stars or anything. It's somewhere in that 3.5, 3.75 range. I'm confident in saying it's simple and to the point. And look, the woman's been out for almost 3 years. It's a return match. This is a story they tell in Japan. And the fact it came against Ohada and Nakamori, particularly Nakamori in this case, that's good. Her contemporary that she's going to be against for many years to come got the win over her instead of some 30-year-old veteran that can't move. This was good. I like this. So very cool seeing Arisa Nakajima back and Nakamori getting the pin. And Ohada's essentially a freelancer, but she's more Wave affiliated. So the right decision was Nakamori to go over here. So from there, we have an 8-man tag. This is your 20th anniversary match for JWP. The teams are Command Bolshoi, Kyoko Kimura, Manami Katsu, and Mayumi Ozaki. What a team. They took on and defeated the tandem of Carlos Amano, Kazuki, Keiko Ono, and Mari. This went an excruciating weird 13 minutes. It was pure chaos of mid. It's a bunch of mid-carders and Ozaki. I guess Amano was more than a mid-carder, but in Oz Academy, she is certainly an upper mid-carder. We'll give her upper mid. How about that? But there was just so much focus on the pure chaos. Just you couldn't keep track of what was going on. Kazuki and Mari are doing the whole 1,000 years of death. That's the gun, the finger gun into the butt, and they do that a lot, especially in the ending stage of the match. I don't know, guys, for a 20th anniversary tag, this didn't feel like it, and it didn't do anything. It was just pure nonsense. I don't get what the point was when, you could have done, I don't know, book some other people, I guess. I don't know. Make it more interesting. Bolshoi pins Kazuki to win the match, so the JD star person, of course, loses. But she's been signed to JWP for a while, for all intents and purposes. Now we get to the top 3 matches of the card, and I was very excited for this. It's Emi Sakura against Kaori Oniyama. Now, this turned out to be pretty weird. So there was lots of anticipation going in simply off the Yoneyama retirement debacle at the end of 2011 and Emmy being so emotionally betrayed over it. So they play this long video package building up the match. Emmy goes to the ring. You know, she's got her music playing. The lights are on her. It's a little dim. And then out of from behind, Yoneyama jumps her and hits a top rope drop kick to the back of the head. She hits her little running knee strike in both front and back. And then they exchange like three or four moves. And it goes into Emmy trying a La Mahistral cradle. Yoneyama counters that. Emmy counters the counter into another La Mahistral cradle and pins her in 31 seconds. We're done. And there was an initial pop, and the crowd is kind of going nuts for it, but then it goes deathly quiet because they realize, oh shit, we're only going to get a 30-second match between Emmy and Yoneyama. One of their matches was a match of the year contender in terms of women's wrestling with the hair and title match there. And so this came off as a huge disappointment to me, and it was all about the post-match promo, where the whole purpose was to convey Emmy's forgiveness of Yoneyama. I get the emotional standing of the wrestlers, but I'm here to see a wrestling show, and so much of their emotions are tied to reality. This felt like more of a Yoneyama punishment to Emmy, rather than them having an actual match. So as a fan, I feel kind of cheated, to be honest. And I know this is over 10 years ago that I'm backtracking, you know, being peeved, but you know, that's the reality. And you know, this is the 20th anniversary of JWP. Kari Yoneyama has been a big part of JWP. Emi Sakura, Did she win this title in the mid-2000s? Let's see. No. But, okay, so Emi Sakura is not a former champion at this point in time. But Yoneyama is, and Emi Sakura is a veteran of the scene that has a tremendous amount of respect from a lot of people, and yet all we got was this 30 seconds kind of, it's over. And they forgive each other and raise each other's hands and go to the back. I don't know. This seems to be the type of moves that turns off an audience to me. Much like the previous match, but, you know, clearly doing different things and goals here. Luckily, the last two matches, I think, absolutely delivered, at least in-ring, because it's the Daily Sports Tag Title match, JWP Tag Titles. It's Ranyu and Toshimatsu defending against Leon and Rey. I'm shocked this went to only 12 minutes. 12 minutes, 43 seconds. It was just cracked out nonstop, real feeling JWP All-Star type tag. This took that Arisa Nakajima return match and kicked it up a notch. Like, this had the stakes, this had the near falls, and this is what we want to see out of a Joshi tag match, really high-end stuff here. That's what will draw an audience. Is stuff like this, where you have a team on retirement road here, and then a very good stylistic team of Leon and Rey really trying to stop them. So lots of good pace. I'm praising the hell out of this. It stayed fast. Great near falls based on the heavy hitting moves that you see from these wrestlers here. You know, Leon's doing her walk rope drop kick. She's doing the frog splash. Rey's doing moonsaults. Yamatsu and Yuyu are doing all their tandem moves that you love seeing them do. Rey, the biggest near fall came when Rey hits a corkscrew senton off the top and just obliterates Umatsu in the sternum. It's broken up, but the crowd really reacted to this one, and this was rad as hell. Now, Rey does end up eating the pin. She takes the Ranyuyu big forearm, which goes into the dragon suplex to get pinned by Uematsu. So the Yuyu Uematsu team retains the JWP and Daily Sports tag titles. And this is what I was questioning in the previous episode is, here we have Leon and Rey. A very excellent dynamic tag team, a tag team that's staying in this promotion, and it's going to help you go further into the year what you got. And instead, it is the kind of thank you run. And I just don't think that accomplishes for the long term and in the future what you need it to. Like, this, like, they already won tag league, that's their thank you, and then let's put a team over. Otherwise, you're defeating the purpose of your tag titles, in which the best team was never beaten, they just retired, and these tag titles will be vacated as such. So how does that make a team like Leon and Ray work? Leon's a former champion of this promotion last year, and Ray is a former Infinity champion in another promotion. So these aren't two slouches, and yet they can't beat a team on their way out. That's just my take on that. I'm very for going out on your back kind of situation. The thank you runs don't really do much for me personally. I like seeing wrestlers, you know, beat people clean. And Yuji and Uematsu sure beat people clean on their way out. And I did go into a discussion in the last podcast of, aren't major stars, and have they already put over all the teams that they possibly could have at this point of their career? Yeah, you can make that argument. That's why I'm not too upset about that, but this is JWP. This is one of the bigger promotions for women's wrestling at the time in 2012, and I'm just saying I would have liked to see some closure with a passing the torch type moment. And I think Leon is definitely a good representative for the Ranyu Uematsu kind of personas and styles. And that will take us into the main event for the openweight title. It's Tsubasa Kurigaki defending against her tag partner and friend, Kayoko Hariyama. As you know, I'm more of a fan of their tag team than I am watching them do high-end main event singles matches. Tsubasa Kurigaki has not defended this title once since winning it against Haley Hatred in December. So this is her first defense, and here we are at the 20th anniversary show. Now, I will say right out of the gate, this match was great. I think it's a 3 out of 3, 4 stars flat kind of match. I really like this. Right now, it's standing as a match of the year contender for the list at year's end. I'll have to compare how I think a couple of those stardom matches go. I think that Nanai Mako Satomura match is probably the contender right now, but this might be better, actually. I'll have to kind of think about that. What they did, I thought, was executed super well. It was a lot of power, and they mixed in some good speed spots to go with it. Tsubasa Kurigaki can still move very well. She does her springboard. She has a lot of power. I mean, watching Kurigaki here lift up Hariyama in kind of the razor's edge position, the running three, and for her to turn that into a flipping dominator, kind of like Lance Archer, super impressive, because Hariyama is not a small woman, at least comparatively to the rest of everybody else here. And then Hariyama doing all of these top rope leg drops probably does not go well on her hips and back. They really pulled out all the stops for this match. It went 19 minutes, 34 seconds. Hariyama does a ton of leg lariats, including a couple off the top rope. She does more top rope leg drops, much like in the fame of Bull Nakano. Kurigaki gets her big near falls off her power moves, but Hariyama does end up winning this and taking the title. So no defenses for Kurigaki. And Hariyama already now champion again. So there was a moment in this match where I was thinking about it, and it really clicked that Hariyama should indeed win this match. Tsubasa Kurigaki is very much a charisma vacuum. She has no personality, no nothing. She can't cut promos. She doesn't seem to have the same reaction as anybody else on the roster. And she's already held this title before, and she already defeated the quote-unquote bad gaijin and got the title off her. So what would her reign have been in that case? She already had, let's see, Kurigaki last had the title in 2005 for 252 days. So she had it for a while there. A good chunk of time. She beat Azumi Hyuga for it, and she lost to Manami Toyota. So I'm sure if we look at some numbers back from the mid-2000s, they aren't jumping off the page or anything. But more importantly is Hariyama had this title for 719 days. From April 2008 to April 2010. So, like, this is where she won. Did she win this thing prior to that as well? Or is this her second reign? Okay, so this is her second reign with the title now. She lost to Nanai, and we went into a lot of talking points over attendance just dipping down almost immediately upon that title loss. And you know what? I'm going to look at a couple of Kayako Hariyama's Korakuen Halls here in particular. So the, let's see, Korakuen Hall 2009 October anniversary against Yonayama. So Yonayama, she can pop houses. They got 859. Let's go to Yumiko Hota at Korakuen Hall Pure Slam September 2008. Yumiko Hota, former AJW main eventer, 774. That might have something to do with Yumiko Hota, to be honest. But we're still in that, like, 800 plus or minus range. Cinema Club isn't going to do anything. Itabashi Green Hall is certainly not. Here we go. Azumi Hyuga, Mania X, 2009. Well, that's, I had that written down. I think that's another 810, yeah. So, how about this Azumi Hyuga when she won the title, when Hariyama won the title from her to start her first reign? 964, okay. So, not since her initial title win over Azumi Hyuga way back in 2008 has any sort of Hariyama reign popped a house or title match or anything. It's all these same numbers. So, again, I do think the right move was to take the title off Kurigaki, but unless Hariyama, I think the idea is Hariyama is the quote-unquote best veteran main eventer that they got on this roster right now. And you can argue, absolutely, that's the person that should have it. And I do make that argument a lot. I made that argument recently with Pure J, with Hanako Nakamori. Like, she should be champion. It's either her or Leon at this point in time. And Leon just had the title. And Nakamori is the one to go for it. There's nothing wrong with that. But what needs to happen is you don't have this person lose to someone like a freelancer. The goal should be your quote-unquote ace of the promotion, your main event player, puts over a young person signed to your promotion. So whether that's Hanako Nakamori, whether that's someone young that frequents your promotion like Misaki Iwata, or in this case, Ari Nakajima. We'll put those three names out there. Those are your three people that I'm seeing in JWP right now, Leon included, because she's young. I think she's in her, let's see. I think she's 31 at this point in time, so she's in, like, the prime of her career. That's a person that you can have defeat Hariyama. I'll throw her in there. Yonayama, I think she's kind of on the shit list right now, so we'll put her to the side. But she's your former champion that did pop a few houses comparatively and such, at least on the lesser Korakuens. We went over that quite extensively during her title reign. So the goal of this Hariyama win needs to be put someone young over. That's what needs to happen. And I think any other decision is kind of cowardly and not helping the long-term goal of your promotion. I think, in fact, it brings things down because without giving the young people the chance to kind of prove themselves and then tell the story of their eventual title win, You're kind of blowing the goal in the end and defeating the purpose to getting the next generation over. I think the best example of this is Misaki Iwata in Wave, where by the time she got to the title and got it, her reign while you can talk about the matches being good, nothing drew money, and then that ended up leading to her retirement and the promotion kind of going on hiatus until they came back a couple years later. So you I think you see where I'm going. But this match was absolutely great. I do agree with I do wish Kurigaki would have had a small defense in there in like a January, February, March. Just one would have been fine. I still want to see Sacha Abe really get a title match. She doesn't need to win it. I just want to see the roster be utilized to its fullest potential. Because that's another thing that I'm really noticing throughout a lot of these promotions is they don't really promote a big match enough. There's too much space and time in between these things. So it's really hard to heat people up properly and keep your promotion heated up. So too often you get stuck in the steadfast pace of, like we're seeing now, every single Korakuen they do, it's 800 people. Now, I know on this one in particular, it's the 20th anniversary and we got 1,000, but let's take this momentum. They don't need to do Korakuen every month like a Stardom, but they can run a mid-sized venue to do something good and keep the cards coming. I think we need more effort in this. So 3 out of 3, 4 stars. I might even go 4.25. I might watch this again because Kurigaki and Hariyama, they gave me a match that I don't get to see very often in Joshi, where it's two larger women that are more on the athletic side. And I liked Hariyama's slightly modified look here with the less bright orange hair kind of deal, and the gear was a little less frilly, and Kurigaki was more kind of her normal self, which is totally fine. So a transition reign for Kurigaki, I think, is fine. Would have liked to see a defense in there. Hariyama, I want to see her put over a young person on the come up. I don't know when that's going to be. I kind of tend to lay off looking too far ahead in the future when it's not quite necessary. I'd like to see these things play out and develop theories over where some things are going. And that will do it for JWP Maniacs 2012 here on the Joshi 2010s. Remember, guys, if you're listening on that free feed eventually over on All Japan Women Destiny, please consider subscribing to the Patreon, patreon.com/redleafretrocast, and that'll get you into the Joshi Drive, help support this podcast, help support the archive, and help support me to continue doing this. We're over 50 episodes into these now, and I don't plan on stopping anytime soon. See you next time.